Welcome. You are listening to a UC Davis Center for Poverty Research Conference podcast. I'm the Center's Deputy Director, Marianne Page. In January 2014, the Center hosted the War on Poverty Conference. The conference featured top poverty experts from across the country discuss the U.S. safety net on the 50-year anniversary of the War on Poverty. In this presentation, Thessia Garner discusses James Sullivan's paper, Winning the War, Poverty from the Great Society to the Great Recession. Garner is a senior research economist in the Division of Price and Index Number Research with the Bureau of Labor Statistics, where she has served since 1984.
I'd like to begin by applauding particularly the people who work at the state level here in California, Wisconsin, in Virginia, in New York, and particularly in New York City, for moving forward our measure and our knowledge about poverty. We know that the official poverty measure is flawed. It's seriously flawed. Jim and Bruce have highlighted some of these issues. They had to use some standard to look at changes over time. But the point is, we can't use the official measure to really give us a measure of effectiveness of poverty reduction or as a measure of economic well-being. It's just not sufficient. So it's important to look at where we are today, and it's important to look at where we've been and how we got to where we are today. The purpose of the paper that I'm providing comments on is to look at where we've been and how we got to where we are today. As I said, it's important to look at better measures as well. Now, I have to start with a disclaimer. I work for the U.S. government. What I say here today, they're solely my views and my views alone. They don't reflect the views of people at the Bureau of Labor Statistics or the Bureau of Labor Statistics itself. However, I have had conversations with people within the Bureau, and I'm going to relay some of those conversations as well as some conversations and work that I'm doing with Kathy Short primarily at the Census Bureau. Okay, I added this picture after the first session this morning. This is our reluctant mother in price measurement. Poverty measurement. Poverty measurement is important. Measurement is important. We can talk about all the programs in the world, but if we don't know how to measure what we're talking about, then we can't have the next discussion of where do we go from here. We have to have good measures. Now, I say Molly was a reluctant mother in conversations I had with Gordon Fisher, who's considered the historian of poverty measurement for the United States. He said he had many discussions with Molly. She didn't really care about poverty measurement. She really only cared about the well-being of children. Just so happened, she was working on the well-being of children at what became the Social Security Administration. She was asked in the 1960s to provide testimony before Congress, what would it cost for a retired couple to live? So she did some research on that using some family budgets. In 1965, the Office of Economic Opportunity developed the thresholds that she came up with and the resource measure to produce information for statistical and poverty measurement. There was no agreed upon poverty measure in the United States for the war on poverty. The reluctant mother, her child was adopted by the Johnson administration as the measure on poverty. The original threshold was based on the fact that one-third of after-tax money income was for food spending at home, for home, all right? Well, at the time of the war on poverty, we didn't have a good measure of after-tax money income. The best we had was before tax, and so that's why the official measure is based on before tax money income. But my idea, she used 1955 food consumption survey data and got this relationship between food spending for home and income after tax. She also looked at the 60-61 consumer expenditure survey with the before tax money income and found that the share would actually be one-fourth if you did it before. So she looked at these different multipliers, ended up with a third, even though the resource measure that she started with was after tax, and the one used by the Census Bureau eventually for official poverty statistics starting in 1967 was before tax. Okay, the question, and this is a question that we all ask, it's come up in this paper, what is the purpose and meaning of poverty? In many discussions that I had with Lee Rainwater years and years ago when I first started got involved in all of this, he said, poverty is a societal concept, and it reflects where we are today, not where we were 50 years ago. We need these measures to say how well off and how we've done, but it's where we are today. Can people function in society? But are we talking about some material well-being or consumption or this permanent life cycle? I agree with Jim, my personal opinion. We want an economic well-being measure that does that. And consumption is a very good measure for that. However, there are many people out there who say, you know, that's all fine and good, but I need to know how much money I need or what are the resources I need to buy the things and meet my spending needs of my family. So many people in our country, many of our practitioners are really interested in measuring short-term economic distress. The National Academy of Sciences panel came down more on the side that Jim is talking about, this permanent life cycle income approach, consumption, but because of data concerns, they went with an income resource type measure. However, the supplemental poverty measure, which the interagency technical group came up with guidelines in the winter of 2010, was actually really more focused on short-term economic stress. Now, why do I know that? I know that because we have the thresholds by housing tenure. There's a different threshold for owners with mortgages, owners without mortgages, and renters. The reason is because once you have a mortgage, you have to pay that mortgage or you lose your home. So in the short term, the interest is on spending. But the way the Interagency Technical Working Group, and actually I was a member of that, the way it was set up is that the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census Bureau and many of the people in this room will continue to do research and improve our measure. Unlike the National Academy of Sciences panel who said, you know, this measure should replace the official poverty, the supplemental poverty measure is to be a supplement. It's not designed to be a replacement. And the Interagency Technical Working Group said, we don't have all the answers now. Let's keep working on this. So the framework is set up to do that. Currently, the Census Bureau produces supplemental poverty measure statistics. It's an inconsistent measure. Consistency in the thresholds and resources was very important for the National Academy of Sciences. It's a point I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. But currently, the supplemental poverty measure threshold is based on out-of-pocket spending, including the implicit amount that's spent on food stamps, food and renter's pay, while the resource includes income, cash and non-cash income, as well as value for in-kind transfers. Okay, the purpose of the study today, he added two more years, he told me he probably would, but I didn't have that paper, so my comments are focusing on 1960 to 2010, the main goals, as Jim has said, is to assess the material disadvantage at the bottom of the distribution. You focus on taxes and transfers, look overall, look at the impact on different demographic groups. Again, the focus here, because the interest is in changes over time, they adopt in an absolute poverty measure. It's the official poverty measure. As Jim very, very well explained in the presentation, they still use the official measure for their alternatives, but they anchor it in the 1980 poverty rate. The well-being measure, as he said, before tax money income augmented, and they look at poverty rates using consumption and what they call this core consumption. The expenditures categories where expenditure consumption categories that are best reported in the Consumer Expenditure Survey as compared to the personal consumption expenditures from the national accounts. They provide also in this study, which Jim didn't talk about, relative poverty rates as a robust check, which I thought was a very, very nice addition to this paper. And it also fits it into the international literature, where many other countries, the Luxembourg Income Study being a leader in this field, use relative poverty. So he talks about the ACS, and then they use the imputations from that, and the expenditure survey. Now, what I consider one of the, probably the major contribution of this study and the series of studies that Bruce and Jim have been involved in over the years is their very careful development and analysis of consumption and how to come up with that measure. The Consumer Expenditure Survey is not a consumption survey. It is an expenditure survey that is designed to meet the needs of the Consumer Price Index, what people spend, not what is the value of what people consume. It's a different measure. Personal consumption expenditures is not what people, households spend. It's what households and institutions spend on behalf of households. So as Jim mentioned, the purposes are different, and so our relative relationships of these are going to be different. Key findings: price adjustments have had a large impact. Better measure of poverty when you account for the taxes and transfers, in-kind as well as cash transfers, decline poverty over time. Once you go to consumption, it's even further. There was like 46% reduction overall when you use a consumption measure. I mean, it's huge. All right. They examine the differences in consumption and expenditure patterns over time and conclude, as Jim said, we're winning the war. I think we are winning the war. It's not, everybody's not better off, but a lot more people are better off than they have been in the past. I have five comments. One that deals with consistency in the sample over time. This is really a technical issue. I'm from a data agency. I deal with economic statistical measurement, and so I'm going to be dealing with some of these little tiny issues, but which are important when we're looking at changes over time. Second is the issue of the price index adjustment. Third is the updating to underlie what underlies the threshold. And fourth is what I consider the fundamental question, income versus consumption, and what implication that might have for poverty measurement, and what I have identified as what, you know, some challenges for the future. First, many people are not aware of this. The 1972-73 data that we released to the public, what was released that the data had to have full accounting for the four quarters of expenditures. The release, such a release, has biases in a kind of analysis if you would make a comparison to the 72-73 to the 80 forward. Because when you restrict the data to consumer units where there are four complete interviews, you've got more homeowners, you've got more families where there are two children, and the Midwest is overrepresented. All right? People in the Midwest are very good reporters to the survey. For some reason, they are. That's true. Yeah, it's cold outside. You know, they're willing to talk to you a lot of time. You know, sit down and let's have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. This is important when we're making comparisons over time. It may be that when you look at the publications from the Bureau of Labor Statistics using the 72-73, that your demographics are not that different. But basically, that's the concern that I have when you want to make sure that your samples are comparable over time in terms of how they're analyzed or how they're defined. Now, something that doesn't impact consumption as much as it would expenditures is the assumption of independent quarters. If you want to talk to me about that, we can later. Second is the price adjustment. Some people, actually some of these top researchers outside of BLS, believe that the improvements to reduce bias in the CPI, that the BLS has done too much. So to go the additional step that Jim and Bruce went, we at BLS would stand back and say, maybe you went a little too far. But I still encourage research on this. One caution I have is some of the BLS, we actually do stand behind. It's questionable whether a consumer price index should ever have been used for this adjustment. The point is, the threshold is based on a standard of food. It's a food spending standard, right? And something was done here, so looking at changes in living standards, bedrooms, etc. What if we looked at spending today relative to income, and if we use a thrifty food plan, what do the thresholds look like? Well, I mean, we're not going to do this. Okay, we would have thresholds around $60,000. That multiplier actually would be 9 instead of 3, right? Okay, the fundamental question, income versus consumption. Again, the panel believed conceptually there are arguments on both sides, but they lean towards the consumption side. However, if we do that, quoting the panel, we note that if a consumption-based resource measure, resource definition is adopted for poverty measure at some future time, there will still be a need for consistency between the resource definition and the threshold concept. The official poverty threshold is a spending-based threshold. The NAS threshold, the way it was conceived for the publications with the Census Bureau, as well as the SPM thus far, are spending-based thresholds. We need to come up with a consumption-based threshold. So, I use the supplemental poverty measure approach. These are the spending-based thresholds currently that we have, 2005 to 2012. If we just substituted spending on shelter for owners, with or without mortgages, and now we only need one threshold, we don't need the separation by housing tenure, we would have the green line. That would be our consumption-based threshold. It would actually turn out to be probably higher because I don't have school lunch, I don't have housing subsidies, etc. Okay, the last, data challenges, collection of the data. Are we collecting and can we afford to collect? I think we can afford, but will we as statistical agencies be able to do this given our budgets? Be able to collect the data that we need for good poverty measurement. We're going through a reorganization, or excuse me, a redesign of the BLS for the Consumer Expenditure Survey, and I am fighting tooth and nail to make sure we have information on the Affordable Care Act, that I'm getting information on school lunch, that I'm getting as much information, even if it's an indicator variable that we have not had in the past. We need to account for income transfers, consumption of durables. We need to spend more time looking at assets and liabilities. This is a question of data quality in the Consumer Expenditure Survey. We look at the Consumer Expenditure Survey in terms of financial assets and liabilities were very low compared to the Survey of Consumer Finances. Our non-financial assets are very close. For example, the value of your home. We're very, very close. So I'm still not sure that we have the best measure or the right measures for assets and liabilities. To me, the biggest challenge today forward in our poverty measure is how to account for health care. The National Academy of Sciences and the Supplemental Poverty and the Interagency Technical Working Group said we'll subtract out-of-pocket expenditures, but one of the major criticisms against that is such a measure is not portable. How many people are going to know how much medical care they could subtract to come up with a poverty measure? Another philosophical reason to deal with this in a different way is that many people believe health care is a right. It's a basic need like food, clothing, shelter, and utilities. So if that's the case, how would we account for it? One way we've tried to look at this is through spending, just like we do with the other commodities in the bundle. However, that's questionable whether that's the best way to deal with it. Cutler, Corman, Jessica Banton, and various others of us have said maybe a better way is to include a value of health insurance in the thresholds because healthcare premiums include an amount for risk reduction and expected medical expenditures. So what would some of those thresholds look? These are just some examples using the Kaiser bronze and silver plans that you can find on the internet. I'm just going to end here. I want to thank you for this outstanding paper. If you haven't read Bruce and Jim's work on consumption, I encourage you to do that. It's outstanding work, and they're very, very careful in the way they go about that. Thank you very much.
I'm Ann Stevens, the director of the Center for Poverty Research at UC Davis, and I want to thank you for listening. The center is one of three federally designated poverty research centers in the United States. Our mission is to facilitate nonpartisan academic research on domestic poverty, to disseminate this research, and to train the next generation of poverty scholars. Core funding comes from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. For more information about the center, visit us online at poverty.ucdavis.edu.